Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
The Miami Dolphins have fired the team's offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor. CBS 4's Vanessa Borge is live at Dolphins camp in Davie.
We spoke to WQAM radio host Joe Rose about the decision to fire Lazor.
I'm not surprised. I know there was a lot of frustration after the game, especially when you hear him talk about Dan Campbell wants to run the ball and be physical. And they set a record. They tied a team record for least amount of carries in a game with 9.
Uh-oh.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Ah, the least amount of carries with 9. Well, though, how can the Matt Nagy let this guy get away when you think about it? Bill Lazor. Oh, it's always good to hear a member of Dolphins Radio on the board as well, too. Joe Rose, part of my team with Jimmy Cephalo and Bob Greasy. Boy, oh boy, you think Hub and I are old to be on the radio together. You should listen to a Dolphins game. Man, that is, they had to explain overtime to Bob Greasy 2 years. I'm not lying, Hub. I'm driving back from Indianapolis week 6 when the Bears were there 2 seasons ago, and they're explaining how it works to Bob Greasy. But tell us about Bill Lazor, a man who once rushed the ball all of 9 times, 47-year-old native of Scranton, Pennsylvania, the new offensive coordinator. First of all, what does that mean on a Matt Nagy coach team when you're the offensive coordinator?
Well, that's really the key to the whole thing is, you know, if in fact he is bound and determined to micromanage this offense himself and he's going to call plays and he's not going to be deterred, you're not going to get the top quality candidates for this job. It is not that unusual for a head coach to call his own plays. It's happening in a lot of places, and for some reason, Bears fans seem to think it's only Matt Nagy. But each one has a different, well-defined relationship with their offensive coordinator. One thing we never did find out in 2 seasons was what was the working relationship between Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich. Was Helfrich doing the game plan each week? Was he just there were reports that he was the running game coordinator and he got fired for not coordinating the running game better. I mean, we just don't know enough behind the scenes to know what's going on here. Lazor is another Western Pennsylvania guy, you know, and that's big with Nagy. You see a lot of that around him. While there is no direct connection to Andy Reid, he is very big in the run pass option offense. He's got a lot of that in his history. And some of, you know, I don't understand. I don't want to get off the subject, but we've talked about this. I hate Twitter. people, why is it that so many people who claim to love the Bears have nothing but hate for the Bears? You know, and it's this instant, oh, it's got to be wrong because the Bears did it. It's got to be wrong because Nagy did it.
Hub, I did this on, I didn't take it to Twitter yesterday. I did it on these airwaves.
The hate train of resignation.
It's just
yeah.
Because my entire life, it's been embedded in me to pretty much doubt anything this organization does to have sustained success in any category.
Well, but in your most formative years, they went to only their second Super Bowl. I mean, you know, it's not like,
right, and there was nothing else. That they've been to the playoffs once since.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not defending the organization. I'm just saying, and that's a different organization. That's 3 regimes ago. Okay, what you have now, what you have, and I think we just talked about this the other day. In the 2 years that Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace have been together, they are 20-13. There are only 7 other teams in the NFL that are as good or better, okay? In their first year together, you got the coach of the year and the executive year. Yeah, last year was a disappointment. And yes, Matt Nagy screwed up. I'm not here to defend, you know, Matt Nagy, the job he did in 2019, but I'm not willing to wipe out the job he did in 2018. This is not yet proven to be a bad organization. They had a great year their first year. They had a disappointing year their second year, which, by the way, was a .500 year. And you look at how close they are to teams that are even playing right now. And so that's why I can't automatically distrust everything they do. So getting all the way back, hopefully, to the subject.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Lazor.
You've got so much.
Stay off the Twitter and all that. And if you're going to do something like that, just wish somebody happy birthday.
You put so many snacks on the plate for me there. But well, yeah, let's get back to Bill Lazor and the question.
Well, and so the point would be he was an offensive coordinator with two horrible organizations at the time.
Yeah.
In Miami and Green Bay. And what people forget is that when he was fired mid to late 2015, he was fired by the interim head coach, Dan Campbell, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot more here than just, oh, you know, he had a game where he only called nine running plays, so he's got to be a bad offensive coordinator.
I just think it's Matt Nagy has earned the criticism and cynicism that he's getting for his, you know, and there's the running game is never going away, and people can scream all they want to about how much it's more exciting to watch Joe Burrow last night. It was a great show, or it's more exciting to watch Patrick Mahomes. The Super Bowl was 13-3 last year. It was 3-3 at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and with a quarterback like Mitch Trubisky, if you had a running game, you can be a player as good as their defense is. I mean, how dissimilar are the Bears to the Buffalo Bills, who were a playoff team, or the Tennessee Titans? They're missing a running game. That's what they don't have. And when I hear something like nine carries per game, I just think he and Matt Nagy should be attached at the hip because Matt doesn't seem to value it. All he does is talk about valuing it, Hub.
I think that Matt Nagy understands how important the running game is. I don't know that Matt Nagy is as good a play caller as he thinks he is, or if he's going to be. I mean, that to me, when we start to dig into this and say, well, what's fair and what isn't, you know, people who want to assume that he can't run an offense, Mitch Trubisky set the Chicago Bears single season passer rating record in the modern era in Matt Nagy's first year. He went to the Pro Bowl as an alternate. I mean, he put up some pretty impressive numbers in just his second year in the league. And in fact, people thought he had taken a huge leap forward. That's one of the reasons there's so much disappointment this year in the big step he took backwards. They were the 21st rated offense, in the NFL his first year here after being 30 or something like that under Dowell Loggins. There was work to do. Again, Matt Nagy didn't get here by being a bad coach or just being lucky. Now, is he the answer? I don't know, because you're right. He earned most of the criticism in 2019, but as you evaluate him overall, you can't ignore what they did in 2018. That's where I get a little crazy about all this. I think, I'm getting back to where we started. If your offensive coordinator is basically going to be possibly not even as high on the totem pole as some position coaches,
right,
you're not going to get the cream of the crop. And that's apparently the system, yes. Now, within a few hours of that, we get this report. I haven't confirmed it yet. Coming out of Cleveland, that Brad Childress isn't coming back.
Right.
You know,
right.
There was some comfort that you had a former head coach, former offensive coordinator in Childress. So now you're down to Nagy, Lazor, and Ragone. You know, after everything you had last year, working with Mitch and working with, you got the other coaches, but basically running the offense, devising the game plans. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah, the suspicion is Childress will wind up in Cleveland with Kevin Stefanski. They have a relationship, and that's where they will wind up. And I want to get into the Kevin Stefanski process a little bit later, too. I think you and I will feel similarly on some of the ways that went down. This segment is brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Let's hear from Marvin Lewis, who is Bill Lazor's former boss, the former head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, on Matt Nagy's new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor.
Philosophically, as he sees the game of football, is to attack the defense, whether it be run or pass. I think in order to attack the defense, you got to attack the defense. And I don't want us to be passive that way. And so I'm always encouraging whoever it may be to be more attacking, to make sure that we don't ever allow the defense to sit there. We got to attack them. We got to throw the ball over their heads vertically as much as we can. If you want to get their attention, that's what you do. You know, what strikes me about Bill and his coaching style is his preparation, his detail of his preparation. He thinks about each and every, as you script the practices each and every day. He's very methodical about that and wants to make sure he has all bases covered and goes back and wants to research each thing and not just leave anything for chance.
Marvin Lewis, preparation? Yeah, I've heard that. That's good. Coaches are prepared. What was it at the beginning we all chuckled at? The thing about attacking defense is you have to attack the defense.
Yeah,
that's very,
thanks,
very
Marv.
Good.
Well,
that's, you know, spectacular.
There's another irony here with Lazor is that when he got fired in Miami, his quarterback coach who took over was Zach Taylor. And so then he goes and gets hired in Cincinnati, and him and Marvin Lewis get fired. And, you know, who steps up?
Let's find out what Bill Lazor sounds like. Here's the Bears' new offensive coordinator.
I think as a coach, the things you have to do, number one, you have to be a great teacher. Number two, you have to be demanding. So I think the best coaches have both. They do a great job teaching. This is what we want, why we want it, and how we want to help you do it. And then you got to hold them to it. You know, you got to say that we're going to establish this as the standard of how we want it to look and just demand that they do it.
Hey, let's go now. Let's play fast. Let's run our feet. Let's control the line of scrimmage. Let's go, baby. Let's control the line of scrimmage.
Bill Lazor, mic'd up. He's Bill Lazor. Teaching. I hope whether it comes from Bill Lazor or the new offensive line coach, Castillo, I really think it is as critical as Mitch and that development or whatever else they do with the quarterback position to get an offensive line playing up to NFL standards this year. And for me, it starts with Charles Leno, and I've heard you talk about that. He's not good enough. Yeah. Whether we call him Charles Leno today or Jay Leno today, and you and I both have that habit to slip in a Jay every now and again for him, they've got to get better at that position, and they have got to get meaner up front. They've got to be more physical than they've been willing to get. I wonder if they've got those Neanderthal guys.
Well, they don't right now. I mean, they do on the interior. I think they can be okay inside. But I have been saying from 3 years now, from the time they gave him the contract extension, I didn't understand what they saw in Charles Leno. He has easily led the league in penalties over the last 3 years combined, was a runaway leader during the 17 season. He cut him in half in 18, and I think he may have still been second, and I think he led the league again this year. And that has nothing to do with the fact that he can't handle a speed rush to save his life, you know, and so they got to get better there. And that's only their second greatest need because they don't even have players at tight end. I mean, if they get healthy, and I'm not ready to write off Trey Burton. He was what you hoped he'd be in 18. And we now know he was never healthy, you know, for whatever reason. So that's
you sure he's going to play again?
He's going to play again. I'm not sure he's going to play in Chicago again. I think he's going to play in Chicago again. His contract is straight. It's weird because the other contracts all left some room for restructuring to create cap space. They eat most of his salary and all of his cap hit, whether they keep him or not. So there's no point in not keeping him. But as far as physically, yeah, I'm sure he's going to play again.
Let's cover one more Bears item and give something some closure because there was a lot of attention given to it this year, and rightfully so. And I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, even though it seems like people really want to dig their heels in from one extreme or the other. And that is the lack of production from Khalil Mack. Depending on what stats are your money stats, some people want to go with pressures. That stat was okay for Khalil Mack this year. Sacks were not an acceptable number. He finished tied for 27th in the league in sacks. He didn't finish high in tackles for loss. He didn't finish high in quarterback hits. Forced fumbles, his best attribute. I think he was tied for 5th. He's the highest paid player in the history of the game defensively. He has to be better next year. I don't know how anybody could say it was a good year for Khalil Mack. I think the conversation now, Hub, is fair to wonder if that deal is going to wind up being a win for the Bears. If all the Bears get out of the Khalil Mack era is a North Division title and a 12-4 first round exit, I don't know how you could call that a win for two first-round draft picks. I think the jury is still out on that trade.
Well, you can't call that a win, but I see no reason to believe that that's all they're going to get. He's 28 years old, and if he gets 14, 15, 16 starts with Akeem Hicks on the field, I think you'll see the numbers immediately improve there. The amount of special attention that he got was unusual. And so you get people who you know, they watch on TV, they think it's like watching tape, they see two or three plays where he's not double teamed. So he wasn't double teamed. He got an unbelievable amount of special attention. He got no help elsewhere. He was dropped into coverage far more than he was the year before. Now, again, you're right. He didn't have a good year. I'm not suggesting he had a good year. And I'll go a step further. I think it was the Phil Emery explanation that pressures are as important as sacks because they change the quarterback's eye level. Bull. Yeah, there's no comparison to a pressure to putting the quarterback on his back.
Right.
Okay?
Yes. Get him horizontal. Yeah, that
so,
would be nice.
Yeah. Let's leave that alone right now. So yeah, he had a disappointing second year, as did everybody in this regime. I mean, tell me somebody who improved this year over 2018.
Any defensively, I thought Kyle Fuller was as good as he was the
Kyle
year
Fuller
before.
Was
That's
as
it.
Good. Yeah,
as good, not yeah. better.
You know, Eddie Jackson didn't have as good a year. You had the injuries to your inside linebackers. Leonard Floyd actually is a very good all-around linebacker, but that's not what he's getting paid for. He's supposed to be a sack guy, mm-hmm. and so you know he certainly didn't improve over the year before. Aaron Lynch, I thought, was a huge disappointment. Roy Robertson Harris is great as your fourth or fifth, but if he's got a start, you got a problem. You come back over on the offense. Allen Robinson, you know, being healthy and being in the system. So you know, you can't just point at one guy. The whole team took a step backwards, you know, and I think part of that is because there are certain positions that they just weren't competitive at on offense. And defensively, let's be fair, I think Vic Fangio is the best defensive coach in football. When John Fox was hired, my first choice for the job was Vic Fangio, and I was initially disappointed because I didn't know as much about Matt Nagy, although he was on my list of five top candidates as well from talking to people around the league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that year last year was Vic's fourth year with this defense. It was Chuck Pagano's first. There is something to be said for time with your personnel, getting to know these guys, getting to know how you use them. There is so much talent on that defense. I expect the defense to be much better this year, again, if they're relatively healthy. You can't lose Akeem Hicks and Danny Trevathan and Roquan Smith mm-hmm. and you know the injuries they had. That's the other thing. There's an analogy to the Packers here. The Bears were the luckiest team in the NFL with health in 2018.
Right.
They didn't do that well in 2019. Green Bay Packers, I was getting ready for the broadcast Sunday, so I happened to find this. The Seattle Seahawks have 17 guys on injured reserve, including 7 one-time starters on offense. Packers have 7 guys on IR and not a single starter. Only starter who's really been hurt all year was Devontae Adams, missed, 3-4 games with that turf toe.
Yeah, Bulaga missed Sunday night.
Well, he was sick. Yeah, so, I mean, they had some other games lost, but I'm talking about an injury that would impact you.
Right.
And so, you know, it's all part of the equation, and I get all of the Bear fan frustration. I'm not saying anybody should be confident about 2020, but this you know, just below the line negativity about everything that happens, I don't understand, because there is still talent. This defense could still be really, really good.
This hour of the show is brought to you by Subway. What's up, Shep?
We got a shakedown I-57.
What's happening?
Press
what do we have?
Release from the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears to move training camp to Halas Hall. The Chicago Bears announced today the team will hold its entire training camp at Halas Hall, the team's training facility at Lake Forest, beginning with the 2020 season. Additional details regarding the 2020 training camp schedule and free public tickets will be available later this spring. Quote, we will host training camp practices at Halas Hall in 2020 while maintaining a public component to many of the sessions to incorporate our loyal and passionate fans, said Chicago Bears president and CEO Ted Phillips. Olivet Nazarene University continues to be a valued and committed partner, but with the recent investment in our campus expansion and state-of-the-art facilities in Lake Forest, we feel it is important to stay home for training camp. We'd like to thank ONU, including President John Bowling, and the Bourbon A community for their 18 years of partnership and hospitality.
Did they have more contract time left with ONU? I thought they still had time remaining.
I thought there was an extension that had 1 or 2 years left, and obviously it had an out because they're out. You know?
Yeah.
So it's not unusual. Teams around the league have been trending this way.
This is not the first time they've trained in Lake Forest. Lake Forest was it was between Rensselaer, Indiana, and Platteville, Wisconsin, right? Mm-hmm. Help me with the years. Yeah. Late 70s?
Early 70s.
Early 70s. Okay.
They were signed through 2022.
I thought they had time remaining. Wow, pulling up stakes. Yeah. A big middle finger to ONU.
I have mixed emotions about this one. You know, since I live
short drive for you.
Well, I was gonna say since I live 10 minutes from Hallis Hall and no more, you know, 3 weeks in a hotel, I got no problem with that. But in terms of whether it's good or bad for the team, I think that there's value in that away from home camp time. You know, the whole team bonding, camaraderie, chemistry thing.
Yes, I'm a buyer in that too.
And so it's one more thing we'll watch now, and we'll see what the impact is.
I want them to go back to Platteville, Wisconsin, but I don't think they ever will. Those were the best of days, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, Bourbonnais was nice. It was never Platteville. Platteville was special those years.
People of Kankakee County probably receiving this news this afternoon with long faces. Man, 18 years already it's been.
Are they going to pick up Donlin's and move it to Lake Forest, like the pop-up shop? You know?
Well, you know, guys, the interesting piece of this, though, that is where the feedback and blowback is really going to come from, is that after being down for a few years because of the 18 excitement, there were a couple 6,000 to 10,000 attendance days in Bourbonnais this year.
Right. Everybody wanted to see those eight kicking nets.
They can improve, you know, they can get fans into the Hallis Hall property for training camp, but not 1,000. You know what I mean? There are going to be, I got to believe there's going to be hard to get tickets for this.
Yeah, I don't, I know exactly what the campus looks like. It's been a year or two since I've been by, maybe even a little bit longer than that. I was at the drive the last time I was up there. So that's 16.
But you haven't seen any of the new, now that they've reconfigured it. It's now the L-shaped facility, and they've got two new practice fields. But there are none of these practice fields with any substantial room around them.
Nowhere to go.
For fans. Yeah, so, I mean, there's some viewing areas that they've built, but you're talking hundreds, not thousands. So
Matt Nagy will just tell you to go watch the Colts game. Don't worry about watching us practice. Go.
Do me a favor and go back and watch that Colts game.
Go watch the Colts game. Wow, Bourbonnais, we hardly knew ye. Yeah, I was. I remember the first camp in Bourbonnais.
We knew it. Believe it or not, that was 17 years ago. So we got to know
Bourbonnais. Right? Desmond Clark, first Bourbonnais face. Hey, Des, how are you, kid? All right, we'll get some more of your texts. We got more football coming a little bit. I want to get into how Kevin Stefanski was required to get the job in Cleveland in just a little bit. And lots of divisional recap, championship Sunday preview. 4 o'clock hour, we will open up the phones to you on anything and everything. Pro Football. Hub Arca sitting in for Danny Parkins. I'm Mac, and you're listening to The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Final thoughts today, season?
Well, Paul, I mean, it's disappointing because you're coming off one of your best all-around performances against the New Orleans Saints. You beat a team like that at home, another 13-3 team.
Mm-hmm.
You fast forward another week, you're playing a team that's fresh. They come out, I think, on their scripted first drive, and they executed it flawlessly. Then the game starts to settle down a little bit.
Yeah.
And ultimately, our offense was not able to move the ball, and I think it was our running game not really producing the 3, 4, 5 yards a clip that we're used to.
Yep.
The athleticism of this 49ers defense did that. And as time wore on and they wore on our defense, and ultimately, though, mistakes have put us where we are.
The San Francisco 49ers will host the NFC Championship game at Levi's Stadium next week.
That's how it sounded on KFAN with our pals Paul Allen and Pete Bursich, Pride and Joy of Providence High School. I think it's safe to say call them our pals on this show. We like both of those guys. And hope I've not heard all 32 NFL broadcasts for radio crews, but heard a bunch of them driving home this year from Canada on a Sunday afternoon, and theirs was as enjoyable as I heard. I thought they were incredibly enthusiastic and are a little bit more talk showy than they are typical play-by-play analysis.
Paul is very good. I'm not as familiar with Pete. I'm usually on a field or in a press box somewhere, so I don't get to hear a lot of this. But I've known Paul for a long time. He does a really good job, and I've heard good things about Pete. I don't think the Vikings had much of a chance going up there in the first place. So I was surprised by what they did in New Orleans. I think everybody was. But that didn't make them any less of an underdog against San Francisco. San Francisco has consistently played the best football in the NFC all year long.
Certainly at home, they have been very, very good and better offensively at home than anybody realized, averaging more than 32 points per game in Jimmy Garoppolo's 11 career starts going into Saturday's win against the Vikings. The Vikings earned my respect against the Saints. I thought Kevin Stefanski called a fantastic game against a very good defense. They neutralized the best pass rusher on the Saints for the most part. I think Jordan had one sack on the day, but they fed the football to Dalvin Cook, and the rookie had a half a dozen carries as well. And Kevin Stefanski takes the opportunity in Cleveland. But he's agreed to do something that is uncharted water, to my knowledge, in the NFL, and that is he submits his game plan to the diagnostics department. The guys in the nerdery on Friday, the guy's name is Paul D. Podesta. For those of you who have seen Moneyball, he's the character played by Jonah Hill. That wasn't his name in the movie, but that's who it was. So Kevin Stefanski, NFL head coach, Give your game plan to Jonah Hill and make sure he signs off on it before this is approved. I'm eager to see how that shakes out and see how long it takes Kevin to speak candidly on the issue.
This gets back to what we were just talking about in the last segment about, because of the Bears' structure and the way Matt Nagy wants to run his offense, they had limited candidates for the job. Okay, now head coaching jobs are different. Everybody wants one. But there's a reason that Josh McDaniels, after spending 7 hours, said bye, not interested. You know, there's a reason that Mike McCarthy didn't wait. There's a reason Ron Rivera didn't wait. I'm still stunned that Chico went to Washington. I knew he was going to take a job. I mean, talk to him, but to go to work for Dan Snyder, I mean, it's like, hey, I'm going to take this job and have my hands tied behind my back. There wasn't anything else attractive. The New York and Carolina searches were pretty narrow. And Cleveland, the good guys didn't want to go there. I'm not saying Kevin Stefanski's not a good coach, but show me where on his resume he's done enough to justify getting a head coaching job.
Yeah, he's only been there a year and change.
And the punchline is that in that year they were so disappointed in the run game they had to bring in Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison to fix it.
Right.
He wasn't even his own offensive coordinator in many respects, you know? And now he's the head coach, so... Listen, there's a reason that Jimmy Haslam just hired his sixth head coach in 6 years, and the reason is because he's got Paul D. Podesta with no football background whatsoever as the most important guy. I heard a long thing driving back from Green Bay. I was listening to the guys on the NFL Network, and they were talking about this, and basically what happened is there was a power struggle between John Dorsey and Paul D. Podesta, and it was no contest. Dorsey, one of the best evaluators in the NFL, is out, and they got this sabermetrics guy who's going to run the thing.
So what does that mean for the do you think this is a wait and see thing, or do you think the Browns are on the ground floor of a new trend?
It's the same thing as what I was saying about Lazor in the last segment. It doesn't mean Stefanski's a bad coach. It just means that he's put himself in a difficult situation. Do I think this is the new trend? Absolutely not. Okay. One of the reasons it works in baseball is because there's no physical component to worry about. It's not a contact sport, okay? Football is always, in its essence, going to be about blocking and tackling and the size of your heart. And none of that gets measured by sabermetrics.
You know, we talked with Ron Rivera about that on the show, and I liked what his angle is on it. He has a guy. He has regular conversations with the sabermetricians people, and sometimes they compliment him on decisions that he makes, even when they don't work. And he said, no, all that matters is the result here. You can talk all you want to about what the trend is getting this play to convert on fourth down. What matters are not the what matters is that play. What matters is the conditions. What matters is the matchup, where we want to run the ball. Where's the best place point of attack? If we don't have those things in line based on how we've been playing for the first 2.5 quarters, how in the hell can you convince me to make a play based on what the stats are around the league? And then sometimes they try and micromanage it and get their team's trends, but then you're getting into a lot of area that just really it flies in the face of football coaching to me.
You can absolutely use analytics for game management decisions to know what gives you the best odds. And so because the odds are the best, if you follow those analytics religiously, you're probably going to be right more often than you're wrong. You're still going to have times when it doesn't work and you're going to get roasted for it. But that's specific moments and decisions you make in the game. When it comes to designing an offense, you know, when it comes to scripting the first 25 play calls, if your offensive line doesn't feel like blocking that day, you can call any play you want. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like blocking. We've never seen that around here. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves that comes up with a $5,000 signing bonus? Go to chicagowolves.com/sprint to learn how to win the Sprint Power Play Payday. We will give away a pair of tickets for the Cubs convention this weekend before we get to the top of the 4 o'clock hour. And again, 4 o'clock hour, open phone lines. We will open it up to you. Anything you want to talk about regarding the NFL. Because there are only 32 of these jobs, being a head coach in the NFL, I understand why you got to be open-minded to doing things you don't want to do. But every coordinator in the league now, unless I'm wrong, is a 2-comma salary guy, right? Isn't every offensive defensive corner, they're all earning more than $1 million a year, yes?
I wouldn't bet on the Bengals, but other than that, I'd say yes.
Okay, so let's give Kevin Stefanski exactly $1 million to live in Hennepin County, Minnesota. If winning is truly what most motivates me, I keep that job. I stay in Minnesota. I like the future of my football team. I'm not as in love with the quarterback as I would like to be, but I've got very good wide receivers and tight ends. I've got one of the best young running backs in the league. I will wait until I don't have to kiss the ring of a guy who went to an Ivy League school and run my game plan by him. No, thank you. I want nothing to do with that. I can do all right in Minnesota on $1 million a year and be the coach of the Vikings offense and wait for that opportunity. May never come. I know that when I say no because I don't like the parameters you're putting on me. But if that's the case, I'll live on this OC's salary.
Well, that's true. But there's two other factors, I think, Dan, that these guys consider. One is that even if that OC salary is $1 million, it's capped pretty close to that. And those are usually no more than, you know, 1-3 year deals. His first head coaching contract with Cleveland, even if it's just average, right in the middle, he's going to be guaranteed $20 million. He's going to get a 4 or 5 year deal, at least $15 million, probably $20 million. So it is, you know, life defining money if the money is part of it. The other issue is every one of these guys believes that they're so good that they can overcome some handicaps. And I'm sure that even if Stefanski wouldn't admit it to us right now, if he was here in the room with us, there's something in his head that is saying, I'll show to Podesta what I know about football because he's not a football guy and we'll work it out and it'll be okay. That's what everybody who's gone to Cleveland has assumed, you know, but the part I love the most is you got the owner, Jimmy Haslam, who keeps telling everybody who will listen, this is about organizationally and becoming, you know, with one note and one mind and one family and one voice. And he's the guy who keeps making the mess. He's the problem, you know? Yeah. So I don't think he's not the same kind of problem as a Dan Snyder or a Jerry Jones. I don't think he's interfering on game day or, you know, in practice or personnel decisions, but he can be equally distraction with how crazy he gets with somebody.
You know, I read the Snyder comments and saw his news conference, because I too, as a guy who considers himself a friend of Ron Rivera's, as you do, you know, want the best for somebody. I got the impression that Chico essentially is going to have many roles. It's kind of a GM role, how I read it. He's going to have a huge voice in everything they do.
What he was actually one of the guys I was listening to yesterday driving back from Green Bay. He was on the NFL Network with Brady Quinn and Bruce Murray. And he was talking about what convinced him that it was a good situation was hearing Snyder talk about how important it was to him to make it a coach-centric franchise, that he wanted everything to spin out from the coach as opposed to a general manager or a director of football operations. Doug Williams is the GM there, hasn't been fired. I don't know that Ron wants to replace him, but as near as I could tell, I think what Ron was saying without saying it is that he has pretty much authority over everything that's going to go on there relative to the football operation, which is a good situation, completely different from what Stefanski is getting in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. This segment on The Score is being sponsored by Arby's. If you're just joining us, the Bears have made a little bit of news today. If you're a training camp attendee or if you own a bar or a restaurant in Kankakee County, this will affect you. The Bears no longer will be holding their training camp in Bourbonnais starting this year. They are staying home in Lake Forest. So, you know, who I feel for, Hub, are all the young guys who are on the beat, be it newspaper or television or radio, who have young kids at home who no longer have the excuse that they have to be. I mean, that was one of the great things about Platteville, Wisconsin for me in the 90s is you're 4 hours from home almost. You've gone to camp and you're not expected back after hours.
Well, one of the reasons that I never really was as fond as Bourbonnais as I was Platteville is it was too close to home. You know, it was an hour and 15 minutes from Deerfield, and so there was no excuse on any given night. You know, you didn't want to do it every day both ways, whereas Platteville, that was a commitment. You know, we went to Platteville for, 5-6 weeks? I came home once or twice during the whole Platteville experience.
Yeah, and I double-dipped regularly without even having to. I'd want to.
And I'll tell you what, I hated it because my kids were younger at the time, and I missed a lot that I wished I hadn't had to miss. But, you know, from the football and the Bears, the thing about this, that the more I'm looking at this, though, the Bears don't do things in a vacuum. I'm sure they've thought this whole thing through. I'm sure that they had some research firm look into it for them. I'm sure they did a focus group. I'm sure they've studied how the fans are going to react. This is really unfan-friendly. I mean, if you think about it, those crowds in Bourbonnais, you're down there when we do broadcasts, whether it's 1,000 or 6,000.
What's admission to get in to watch them?
Nothing. It's free.
It's free.
You just needed a ticket so that they could control it. That's what it was in Bourbonnais. But where I was going with this is that most of those people may never get to go to a game, and that's why they went to Bourbonnais.
Right.
You know, it was a family entertainment thing that they built there. They're not going to be able to bring in that whole carnival they've had in Bourbonnais the last couple of years out at Lake Forest. You know, they had the whole kid zone and all that stuff.
Right.
None of that is going to be there. And again, I don't understand how they could possibly get more than 500-700 fans in for any given practice.
Obviously, it doesn't matter to them.
Yeah, well, that's I'm sure they've done their homework. But this is not a fan-friendly move at all.
I don't love it, but admit it that it's admittedly selfish reasons I don't love it. I mean, it's probably best for them. I guess so we should be happy for them, if it in fact is, sleeping in their own beds, you know, not having to all the silliness that goes with having to be away and stay at dorms. They're professional athletes, man.
Well, although really you're only going to have probably on the 90-man roster, maybe 40 or 50 guys who have residences here yet. They're still going to have half of them.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've got a hotel deal somewhere in Vernon Hills or you know, not Lake Forest. There's no hotel there that I think would work.
So Lake Forest College. Like do an arrangement with Lake Forest College.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do it.
250 North Washington, as the coach used to say.
Spent enough time there.
Back in the day when you didn't have to go through PR to be part of a gangbang interview and be a part of 15 guys, you can walk to the parking lot with Steve McMichael or Sean Gale or Jimbo Covert and have a conversation and nobody stops you back in the Access era of Washington. Covering pro football. Washington from the Neil from North Lake Bite. Phone lines will be open top of the hour. Cubs convention tickets to give away in a few minutes. Hub sitting in for Parkins. Those of you texting about Parkins, chirping about Clemson, he's not here. He'll be back tomorrow. We'll give him all kinds of crap about the Tigers getting blown out last night by LSU. It's McNeil with Hub on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Mike in his truck says here you got a Hamp story you want to tell us.
Mr. Hampton, it's an honor to talk to you, sir. I met you with my 8-month-old daughter about, gotta be 26 years ago at the Old Navy Pier, and she was in a body cast. The only thing free from her were hands and her legs, and you were talking to me, and she put her arms up deep for you, and you picked her up, and she put her arms around your neck and gave you a little kiss on the cheek, and I saw a smile come across that big old tree face of yours, and it looked like you almost dropped a tear. And I just wanted to thank you for that. And to this day, she's 24 years old, and she still has that picture on her wall. And my question to you is, why do the Bears want to keep Jay Cutler in a pocket when, to me, it seems like he's much better when he's on the move?
That is the essence of taking calls in sports talk radio there. My partner today, Hub Arkush, with the Hall of Famer Dan Hampton a few years back, right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I remember the call like it was yesterday. And I had my finger like an inch above the button.
Yeah.
And I figured, well, I mean, he's not doing anything terrible.
I'm glad you let him go. Yeah, Thank you.
I'm not sure where this is going.
But we would never have old oak tree face if you would have snipped that guy. Oh, that's so good. And
remember, Hamp was looking at me with he kept raising his eyes like, what's this all about?
Where is this guy going?
Yeah. My 8-month-old daughter, she was in a body cast.
Oh, jeez. And how come Cutler's never moving around out of the pocket? That's what we'll do. That's what it sounds like. We'll take some phone calls in just a little bit here. You want to jump in and talk some football? We'll do it shortly after 4 o'clock. 312-644-6767 is our telephone number. Right now, like to get to giving away a pair of Cubs convention tickets. Be caller 12 right now. Use the contest number for that. That's 312-591-6700.
Mm-hmm.
Caller 12 gets a pair of passes for the Cubs convention this weekend at the Sheraton Grand Chicago. It's happening Friday through Sunday. For more information on how you can purchase tickets, visit ChicagoCubs.com/convention. All right, I need some education, Hub. One of the great I love getting wisdom of people who have seen more than I have. And we were talking last week about the great players in NFL history who never got to a playoff game. And I knew we started the list backwards to forwards in terms of the level of greatness. And I knew when we got to the most significant players, it would put a bad taste in a Bears fan's mouth because the number one and two players on the list are Dick Butkus and Gale Sayers. Mm-hmm. Part of the same draft class of 1965. You had some of the core members of a championship from just 2 years prior, still here. A young tight end named Mike Ditka, still pretty productive. Mike Pyle, the center, was a good football player. I'm told. I was a very young guy.
He was.
How in the F did they not get to a playoff game in their entire careers? What in the hell happened?
Well, here's the starting point. In their first five seasons, 65 through 69, there really were no playoffs. You had the conference championship game and the championship game. So, I mean, only four teams, you know, were going. Now, there was only, 16 or 14? Did you have? Yeah, you had the Falcons. So, there were, you know, four of 16, 25% of the teams were going. But it was really just...
So, it was Green Bay precluding them ever from getting it?
No, not at that point, because the Packers after 66, 67, but then 68 and 69. Yeah, I mean, but at the end of the day, it wasn't like the playoffs today where there's 12 teams going in. There was four teams going in. Now, you know, it was also half as many, 60 and 32, but it's still less of a chance to get there. And then, you know, by the time they have the merger and they go to the wild card round, the divisional round, at this point, Gale is pretty much done already. I mean, he's still fighting it, but he's got the second knee surgery, and Dick's knees were pretty much shot. And so beyond that, now you get the obvious answers. The quarterback, was a huge issue. They couldn't find a quarterback, and they didn't have great talent around. They
Bill Wade was done by the time Gale and Dick got here. Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, he was a quarterback in 63. Rudy Bukich took over in 65, which was the year that they were drafted. So and Rudy was the Polish rifle. I mean, the best arm you'd ever seen. He just couldn't hit the ocean from the beach, you know. And it just kind of went downhill from there.
Rudy the rifle?
Rudy the rifle. So they just didn't. It's the same story as now. They didn't put enough talent around them.
That just seems like such a colossal insult. But when you shape it the way you did, there's not many playoff slots. It's still remarkable that two guys at the consider among the best at their positions in pro football history, and they don't appear in a playoff game. It just seems unconscionable.
Walter got to the playoffs twice in his first 9 seasons.
I know.
If the team's that, you can be the best player in football, which Walter was, if you don't have enough around you. And again, that goes back to the quarterback. They drafted McMahon in 82. You know, to me, the greatest tragedy of Bears history is that Jim McMahon didn't care enough to take the game seriously. Because had he worked at it, had he attempted to be in shape, had he attempted to take care of himself, I really believe that that team wins at least 2, maybe 3 Super Bowls.
How do you protect yourself from lacerating a kidney, though?
You can't on that one, but I mean, this is a guy
that was pre Super Bowl. That was 84.
That was 86. I want to say 86 or 86. I think.
Okay, I thought it was Raiders game 84.
It could be. I don't remember the exact year, but the bottom line is
you don't think he respected the game enough.
I don't think he respected his body enough. I mean, and I know that, and that I know that some of his closest teammates have always had that
game. On and off the field, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we'll get to some phone calls. Championship weekend, something from the divisional round on your mind? Officials, not really a part of the story, and thank goodness for that. I mean, on a couple of occasions, but not dominating the news. Or anything Bears, you want to jump in, you're welcome to. Open phone lines for the 4 o'clock hour. 312-644-6767 is our telephone number. Hub Arca sitting in for Danny. I'm Mac, and you've got the score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.